From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. A resurgent Russia, an increasingly influential China, and a hermetic dictatorial regime in North Korea. As Secretary of Defense under President Obama, Ash Carter had to navigate them all. And coming up on Forum, he'll join us to talk about his new memoir and about why he says he wouldn't work for President Trump. Then at 9:30, following the state's devastating wildfires over the past several years, vulnerable communities are grappling with how to plan effectively for their residents' safe escape. And we'll talk about new wildfire evacuation research and what to do if you're ordered to leave your home. That's all next after this news. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As Secretary of Defense for 2 years under President Obama, Ash Carter urged his staff to think outside of the Pentagon's five-sided box, and now his new book offers a rare look inside the Department of Defense, where Carter worked for decades, and it offers a user's guide to the $700 billion defense budget, a consideration of global trouble spots, and an analysis of how the U.S. military can maintain its technological edge. Ash Carter joins us this opening segment of Forum to discuss America's security challenges and his new book, Inside the Five-Sided Box, Lessons from a Lifetime of Leadership in the Pentagon. And we do want to hear from you. What questions do you have for the former Secretary of Defense? You can call us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. That number again, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And in addition to being the former Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter is also now the director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at the Harvard Kennedy School. And welcome, Secretary Carter. Good to have you with us. Ash Carter, do we have you? I know just a matter of seconds ago we did, so we'll try to see what's happening on that line. Let me say by way of, while we're trying to connect with him, by way of introduction, what I said.
Hello?
Okay, we got you there. For a moment there, I thought we lost you. you're with us, Secretary Carter, yeah? Ash Carter, are you there?
One missed call. Are they trying to call us?
I'm trying to determine whether we actually have you here because it's fading in and out.
You want to call them on this number?
No, things are going awry here. We'll try to straighten that out as best we can. In the meantime, let me just say a few things about what I want to talk about with Secretary Carter. As I said in the billboard, he is on record as saying that he would not work for President Trump. That's despite serving 36 years in the Department of Defense under both parties. And the reasoning he gave behind that, and we'll flesh it out a bit more as soon as we connect with him, the reason he gave for that had to do with the fact that it was not politics. It was, as he described it, personal conduct. And he also said that President Trump doesn't seem to listen to his cabinet members. That's why he believes Jim Mattis, who had been his predecessor as Secretary of Defense, resigned.
Okay, try him.
And I think we have you now, Secretary Carter. Good morning.
Yes, Michael, we do.
All right, hallelujah.
How are you?
Glad to have you. I'm okay.
And good to be with you.
Good to have you with us. I was just talking about your response to a question that came up just a little while ago about working for President Trump, and you said clearly that you would not if you were offered that opportunity, largely because, well, number one, personal conduct as opposed to politics, but also you said he doesn't seem to listen to his cabinet members. Those are two good reasons, but let's go further into that if we could. Anything else that you would want to point out in terms of your attitude toward the president if he indeed called on you to serve?
No, those are the two things. Obviously, he's the first president since Ronald Reagan that I haven't worked for, and I haven't been asked. So it's a purely hypothetical question, but it arose in the context of a discussion in the book, which talks about all the different parts of the Pentagon and all the different parts of the role as the Secretary of Defense, asking the question, the very first question, which is, do you take the job in the first place if you're offered the job by the president? And there's a myth, I think, that, of course, if the president of the United States calls you and asks you to serve, you say yes. I think that's a mistake, because your duty, if the president calls you, is to ask yourself whether you can really help him, or maybe someday her, to do the job. And in the case, and secondly, whether you can serve consistent with your own ideas and principles. if you see that you're immediately going to get it into a relationship where you are disagreeing with him a lot, or where you cannot figure out a way to help him because he doesn't listen to you, then you shouldn't take the job. You should wait until he can find somebody who's more suitable to his needs. And so in the case of President Trump, just in my personal case, he doesn't seem to be using the Secretary of Defense the way Ronald Reagan used Cap Weinberger when I first worked for Caspar Weinberger in the 1980s, and the way Bush 1 used Dick Cheney, and then Clinton used Bill Perry, and on, up to President Obama, who listened to me, didn't always do what I asked him to do or suggested to him, but most of the time he did, and always there was a back and forth and a courteous interaction. And I don't see the way that I could help President Trump.
Well, I should go to the fact that there are things that you and the president are in disagreement about. I would assume one of them, and let me just ask directly whether this is indeed the case, since you opened up combat roles for women and actually kept it secret for a while from President Obama. But you also had a lot to do with moving forward people of LGBTQ identity in terms of serving the country. And the president has this antipathy, apparently, to transgender soldiers or those who are transgender identity serving. I presume you're on the other side of that?
Yeah, I continue to maintain that what matters for having a high-quality, all-volunteer force, remember, that's what we have, we don't have a draft, is the military qualifications and picking people and giving people opportunities according to their military qualifications, not other factors. That was the personnel policy background for my decision with respect to transgender members, and I continue to think that's the right thing. We need to, and that, by the way, was also the reason for opening up combat positions to women, for trying to increase our geographic reach a little bit. You may not know this, Michael, but a disproportionate number of recruits come from just six states. So in all these areas, you're trying to reach parts of the population who may have people who are better qualified than someone else to do a military job, because I want the best qualified people, and I want to pick them. I don't want them picked for me as they would be in a draft. So it was a military personnel rationale that drove me in all of those cases, and I stand by them. And I think probably at some time in the future that will come around.
We're talking with Ash Carter, former Secretary of Defense and author of Inside the Five-Sided Box. He's also director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at the Harvard Kennedy School. And let's talk a bit about the five-sided box. The president is trying to run the country like a business, and I'm wondering about the idea of running the Pentagon like a business. You've got literally millions of employees. You've got one of the most complex information networks in the world. It's, I'm trying to think of how we would even describe what has more real estate, perhaps, than any entity
more
we can think of.
More real estate than the Yes, it's more real estate than any holdings than any other enterprise on earth, equal in area to the size of the state of Pennsylvania. It's got more employees than Amazon and UPS and Target and McDonald's and GE combined.
And more R&D than Apple and Google.
Google and Microsoft.
Microsoft combined. Plus, you have to decide War and Peace. So we're talking about an enterprise that is extraordinary in its depth and its width. And
it's a big managerial challenge.
Incredible.
Well,
can you run it like a business?
People tend to think of the Secretary of Defense as always thinking about foreign policy and conducting war and so forth. And, of course, that's true, and in a sense, the war part is the gravest part of your responsibility, but you're also running the world's largest enterprise. And yeah, I mean, managerially, it has some in common with other enterprises, but the Department of Defense is different. It's been around for 240 years. It'll be, I hope, around another 240 years after you. So it's not like companies that come in and out. There's no possibility of going out of business. You have a board of 535 members in the Congress who don't hesitate to try to impose on you regulations much more picayune than anything a corporate board would foist upon a CEO. And then, of course, you're in the public life and public eye all the time. And very importantly, you're doing the most serious thing that can be done. Securities like oxygen, Michael. If you have security, you don't think about it. But if you don't have it, it's all you think about. And because we have security by and large in this country, people don't think that much about it. But if you live in another country where you don't have it, it's an entirely different matter. Our job is to provide that security so that people can sleep peacefully at night, they can be comfortable that their kids are safe. And that's a pretty serious business. So it sobers you up real fast if you're working in the Defense Department.
Well, let me ask a couple questions about that. And we've got a lot of people who obviously want to ask questions of you. So I'm going to move quickly, if I could, with you to really understand not only the fact of running the Department of Defense like a business, but also we've got, and I don't want to get into the politics of this, but we've got Patrick Shanahan now, who is at least acting Secretary of Defense, and he says that it should be an apolitical job, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Oh, absolutely. I was a stickler for that. And Michael, I'll just give you an example. During the 2016 elections, which were, if you remember, kaleidoscopic, lots of different candidates on both parties, and every day somebody would try to ask me or one of my senior officers a question along the lines of, candidate X said such and such today, what do you think? And I told them I refused to answer questions like that, and I refused to let my officers answer questions like that. That was inappropriate. And I told that at congressional testimony and in press conferences. We are an institution, particularly the profession of arms, that stands apart from politics. And it's extremely important. So I agree with that principle, and I was a stickler for it myself.
And once again, we're talking with Ash Carter, former Secretary of Defense, and we do invite you to join us. He says, by the way, that the most urgent threats to the United States and perhaps to the world are China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, and general terrorism. But he feels that we do have a fairly good hold on at least a map to deal with all of those threats. Let's hear from you, and indeed any questions you have for the former Secretary of Defense. The number to call here, the toll-free number to join the program, is 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email questions to forum@kqed.org. And one of the more fascinating parts of the book that Secretary Carter has written is about his forays into Silicon Valley, which include, by the way, allowing Silicon Valley to see if they could indeed hack the Pentagon. And since we're right here in Silicon Valley, some of you may want to ask him about that as well. But let me get to some callers here, and let's begin, Carrie, with you, who's calling us down from the South Bay in San Jose. Welcome.
Good morning. I wanted to ask your guest what he thinks about the ever-growing Pentagon budget and the ambiguity surrounding it, and why has been labeled unauditable.
Yeah, Secretary Carter, what are we at now, $700 billion and counting?
Yeah, a little bit higher than that. And it has gone up steadily, but really slowly. For example, the changes instituted in the last couple of years, which you might associate with the change in administrations, but it's really a change in the politics of budget gridlock and on Capitol Hill, has only been a few percent. Now, it does tend to go up a little bit every year because we have an all-volunteer force and we have to pay our people a little bit more every year. And we have health care costs that go up every year like everything else. The war costs, Iraq and Afghanistan, are going down. So I think it's going to be in this neighborhood of 700 or so. And to the caller's excellent question, is it auditable? It is auditable. And you hear that, and it we know where every dollar is spent. What we can't do is go back in time and do what a corporate audit would do, because we didn't keep records then, which is attribute the value of all the property that we've accumulated over decades. You know, as I said, we're a 240-year-old organization. That isn't really important, I don't think, to the taxpayer, but it is true, and it is something we're trying to do. But it's more a bookkeeping thing than anything else. But, you know, taxpayers deserve to be getting their money's worth. They deserve not to have waste. And I think, and I say in the book, there's a lot that can be done, and I did do, to make sure that the defense dollar was well spent. Because how can I go out and ask for that amount of money if I know money's being wasted? You can't do that with a straight face.
Here's a listener who wants to know, Secretary Carter, about climate change, says our defense professionals are concerned about climate change, have been for years. What impact does DOD have on dealing with climate change policy?
You're right. It is a climate change does affect our own operations, makes us be more interested in committed to doing things in the Arctic. It can spark conflicts in other places if there are droughts and migrations of people, so we do keep an eye on it. Our role in it is not large. We are a burner of fuel on about the scale of a major airline, the U.S. Air Force.
But here again, there's a disconnect. Excuse me. I mean, the president seems to be somewhat of a climate denier, and yet the Department of Defense has really urged him to take action.
Yeah, I make no, we had no question with the scientific consensus and with what we observe going on around the world. And we take that evidence seriously in our own planning. We're not a big factor in creating it. We were not a big part of the negotiations, which mostly have to do with big economic issues having to do with sources of energy and so forth. But we do take it seriously, and that's because the Department of Defense is a fact-based, empirically based. We're serious about what we do. One of the things I'm very proudest about at the Pentagon is it's a learning organization. And when we don't get something right, at least we pull up our socks and try to figure out how to do it better. And so we take on the consequences of climate change for us, and we take it very seriously.
Again, we're talking with Ash Carter, former Secretary of Defense, author of Inside the Five-Sided Box, and he'll be appearing at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco Saturday, June 15th at 5 p.m., and at the Ashman Family Jewish Community Center in Palo Alto on Sunday at June 16th. That's June 16th at 5:30 p.m. And here's another caller. Matt, join us. You're on the air.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my questions. I have just a two-part question. One is, what is the institution in our government that is in charge of protection of the polling machines when we have elections? And then the second part of that question is, what is the single most important thing that the Department of Defense can do to help protect us against any kind of hacking from any foreign power, be it Russia, China, or anyone else?
Matt, thank you for those questions. They're certainly important, and the Secretary was very involved in the so-called cyber war. Ash Carter?
Yes. Well, first of all, the states, not the federal government, run the election systems. So there are 50 separate election systems in the country, and what that means is that some are going to be good and some are going to be bad, some are going to be new, some are going to be old. In my current capacity at Harvard, we have taken some technical experts and deployed them to 48 of the 50 states to help them fortify their election machines for going into the 2020. And also, we're working on the Iowa caucuses, securing the polling for the Iowa caucuses for both parties, Democrats and Republicans. With respect to what the federal government can do on cyber protection, two things mainly. We keep an eye on the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Iranians, and so forth. And so we usually are able to give people who might be attacked by those countries some intelligence heads up. The other thing we do is spend a lot of money trying to protect our own networks. And some of that technology spins off into, it becomes available to others who are trying to protect their networks, let's say the financial system or the energy system. So those are the two principal things we do to help the general problem in the economy and society of cyber intrusion, cyber theft.
Well, I have a listener who's asking, wouldn't it be strategically sensible to engage Iran less provocatively if they are one of the two most powerful players in the region and our clear hostility seems to have been counterproductive for 40 years, getting us nowhere?
Well, it takes two to tango. I agree with that sentiment in general, and it's one of the great tragedies that Iran, which is a very together country, certainly by Middle Eastern standards in terms of the quality, the strength of the middle class, the professional classes, and so forth, and just a healthy social fabric. But it's run by mullahs. And we have from time to time been tried to, administrations in the past, and again, I've been part of all of them essentially, and since Ayatollah Khomeini took over Iran. Americans have, governments have tried periodically to reach out, and it's usually pretty frustrating with them all. So I don't think it's entirely for want of trying, but I agree with what the reader said. It's a, the listener says, it's a great tragedy of history that a people as great as the Iranians or Persians, if you like, are governed this way.
Well, it, it remains a moot point whether we should have dropped out of the Paris Agreement, but I've got a quick tweet that I want to get to because Larry, from your perspective, we should not have. Yes, we're going to Larry Diamond joining us later in the program, who's a democracy scholar, and this is going to come up with him, and I'd like a response from you. This is a tweet from a listener. Says, please ask, what if Trump refuses to leave office? What would the Pentagon do?
If he refused to leave office, if he were not,
if he lost an election in 2020 and said, "I'm not, this is rigged, I'm not leaving,"
I don't think it would take the Department of Defense to remove an individual who was lawfully in the wrong place. So it's a very hypothetical question. It's never happened in our history, but I don't see why the Department of Defense would be involved.
Well, he is the commander-in-chief. He would be a lame duck
but
president.
They would transfer. Well, no, I think we would transfer to a new commander-in-chief who was elected and begin to take orders from a new commander-in-chief. I think the question was who would physically remove him.
That, I believe, was the question. Ash Carter, good to have you with us. Appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Good questions from everyone.
Ash Carter, again, is the author now of Inside the Five-Sided Box, also director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard Kennedy School. And he'll be at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco Saturday, June 15th at 5 p.m. and the Jewish Community Center on Sunday, June 16th at 5:30. And we'll be back with you soon. We're going to talk about evacuation during fires. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.